we present Patricia Gallimore as Flora Post in
Cold Comfort Farm.
Or A Good Woman's Influence by Stella Gibbons. Dramatized for radio by Elizabeth Proud, who is also impersonating the author. Episode 2, Amos's Call. The orphaned Flora Post has arrived with her £100 a year to stay at Cold Comfort Farm in Sussex, the sort of typical farm you find in agricultural novels. She finds life on the farm very messy and has decided to take the Starkadder family in hand and tidy them up. But first, her bedroom curtains need washing. And apparently the only person who can do this job is Miriam, the hired girl, who has just been heard screaming in childbirth in a hut at the bottom of Nettleflitch Field. As Flora approaches the hut, in some trepidation, Stella Gibbons has asked Mr. John Westbrook to open episode 2 with a passage of two-star literature.
The cries from the little hut had stopped. An exhausted silence, brimmed with the enervating weakness which follows a stupendous effort, mounted from the stagnant air in the farmyard like a miasma. All the surrounding surface of the countryside, the huddled downs lost in rain, the wet fields fanged abruptly with flints, the leafless thorns thrust sideways by the eternal pawing of the wind, the farm crouched like a beast about to spring on the hillside. All seemed to be folding inwards upon themselves. Their dumbness said, "Give up."
Flora's practical experience of confinements was non-existent, but she had a lively acquaintance with them through the works of women novelists, especially those of the unmarried ones.
I must say, I do hope there are not going to be any heavy shapes or sweat or howls in this hut. I suppose there are bound to be bedposts.
Who's there?
Miss Post from the farm. May I come in?
What do we want with me and mine?
It's curious that persons who live what the novelists call a rich emotional life always seem to be a bit slow on the uptake.
To Flora's relief, there were no sweat, nor howls, nor bedposts in the hut. There was only a young woman, whom she supposed to be Miriam, rather sullen-looking and like a ripe fruit, of course. Baby, there was none. And Flora was puzzled, but she was too relieved to wonder much what the explanation could be.
Good morning. Are you feeling better? Mrs. Starkadder seems to think you will be about again in a day or two, and if you feel well enough, I want you to wash the curtains in my bedroom.
Why do we come here mocking me, Miss Shame? Me only out of me trouble yesterday.
Yesterday? I thought it was today. Surely you... Didn't I hear... That is, weren't you crying out only about 10 minutes ago? Mrs. Starkadder and I both heard you.
Aye, I moithered out a bit. I was remembering me trouble yesterday. How should Mrs. Starkadder know what I've been through and when I've been through it? Not that I ever says much while it's going on. Mother says it's because I keeps me spirits up and eats hearty aforehand.
Indeed. I'm glad to hear it.
For a second, Flora wondered if the women novelists had been mistaken about confinements. But she recollected that they left themselves a loophole by occasionally creating a primitive woman, a creature who was as close to the earth as a bloomy greengage, and rather like one to look at and talk to. And this greengage creature never had any bother with her confinements, but just took them in her stride, as it were. Evidently, Miriam belonged in the greengage category.
Well, when can you take the curtains down? The day after tomorrow?
I never said as I'd wash your curtains. Haven't I enough to bear with 3 children to find food for, and me mother looking after a 4th? And who's to know what will happen to me when the sook bind is out in the hedges again and I feel so strange in the long summer evenings?
Nothing will happen to you if you only use your intelligence and see that it doesn't. I will tell you how to see that nothing happens. And never mind about the sook bind for a minute. is this Sukhbind, anyway? Listen to me.
And carefully, in detail, in cool phrases, Flora explained exactly to Miriam how to forestall the disastrous effect of too much Sukhbind and too many long summer evenings upon the female system.
'Tis wickedness. 'Tis flying in the face of nature.
Nonsense. Nature is all very well in her place, but she must not be allowed to make things untidy. Now remember, Miriam, no more Sukhbind and summer evenings without some preparations beforehand. Mm. As for your children, if you will wash the curtains for me, I will pay you. And that can go towards buying some of whatever it is children have to eat.
Well, I don't know. Tis Mother. Come in, Mother.
Oh, good morning, miss. A nasty day.
It is indeed. Good morning.
She comes from up at the farm. She wants me to wash her bedroom curtains and me with me trouble only a day behind me.
Oh, she, the cat's mother. Speak properly to the young lady. You must excuse her, miss. She's more like her father's side of the family. Oh, it was a black day for me when I took up with Agony Beetle and left Sydenham for Sussex. Oh, all my people live in Sydenham, miss, and have these 40 years. Oh. Wash them? Oh. Well, I never thought I'd live to hear of anyone up at Cold Comfort wanting a bit of washing done. They might begin on that old Adam of theirs, or whatever he calls himself, and no harm would be done, I lay. She'll wash them for you, miss. I'll bring them along myself tomorrow afternoon and put them up for you.
That will do very well. Thank you.
It says much for the cumulative effect of Cold Comfort that Flora felt almost moved as she spoke these words to one who seemed to perceive, however dimly, that curtains must be washed and life generally tidied up before anyone could even begin to think of enjoying it. She wondered if she should inquire about the welfare of the baby, but decided that this might be a little tactless.
Well, Miriam, ain't you going to ask me how he is?
I knows. There ain't no need to ask. He'll be doing fine, he always does.
Well, you needn't sound as though you wish they wouldn't. Lord knows, they wasn't very welcome, poor little innocents, but now they are here, we may as well bring them up right. And I will, too. It's to me advantage. Come another 4 years and I can begin making use of them.
How?
Train the four of them up into one of them jazz bands. I've seen in the News of the People that they earn as much as £6 a night playing at West End nightclubs. Well, I thought, here's a jazz band ready-made to be aimed, as you might say. And it's better still now there's four of them.
Flora was rather shocked, but she felt that though Mrs. Beetle's scheme might be a little callous, it was at least organised.
After she had gone, the hut sank into a dim trough of languor, pierced only by the shrill beam shed by the personality of Mrs. Beetle. Miriam huddled on her stool, the coarsened lines of her body spreading like some natural growth born of the travail of the endlessly teeming fields. In thick, lewd whispers, she began to tell her mother what Flora had advised her to do. Her voice rose, fell, its guttural syllables punctuated by the swish of Mrs. Beetle's broom.
This place is enough to choke a black.
Save for this interruption, Miriam's voice droned on like the voice of the earth itself.
Well, you needn't stress about it, as though you was talking to someone from the vicarage. It's no news to me. I wasn't quite sure how it was done or how much they cost. Anyway, we know now, thanks to this interference from up the hill. Not that I hold with what she told you, mind you. It ain't right.
Aye, 'tis wickedness. 'Tis flying in the face of nature.
That's right. Mm. All the same, it might be worth a try.
By lunchtime the next day, the combined forces of the unceasing rain, the distressing manner in which the farmhouse seemed sinking into decay before her eyes, and the appearance and characters of her relatives, had produced in Flora a feeling of gloom.
If only Charles were here.
He does so enjoy mystery and gloom. This will not do. I'm probably hungry. Lunch will restore my spirits. But then lunch cooked by a Starkadder and eaten in solitude may probably make me worse, despite my nice little green parlour.
Yesterday's meals had been served in the aforementioned green parlour by Mrs. Beetle, an agreeable surprise. It appeared that Mrs. Beetle came in each day to prepare Aunt Ada Doom's meals.
And so far I have not met Aunt Ada Doom, or Seth and Reuben, or Amos, and I wish to meet them. How can I tidy up affairs at Cold Comfort if I don't meet any of the Starkadders? Well, today I will meet Seth and Reuben at least. Tea time should present a good opportunity. And now I'm going down into Howling to see if there is a pub in which I can lunch.
There was only one pub in Howling, the Condemned Man.
A name like that is only to be expected in Sussex.
And there the landlady, the appropriately named Mrs. Merver, reluctantly agreed to cook Flora a steak.
Now then, if you've everything you want, miss, I must be off and see to my other gentleman's dinner.
Have you another gentleman?
Yes. Staying here. A book writer.
He would be. What's his name?
My bug.
I simply don't believe that. Unless he's a genius, of course. Yes, he must be. A person who was merely talented would have weakly changed his name by deed poll. What a bore it is.
I thought you might like a bit of apple tart, miss.
Oh, thank you. Mrs. Merver, what kind of books does this Mr. Mybug write?
He's doing one now about another young fellow who wrote books, and then his sisters pretended they wrote them, and then they all died of consumption, poor little mummets.
Really? How interesting.
Yes. Now, don't hurry yourself. He's never in afore 2:30. He's up on the downs in all weathers. And a nice old lot of mud he brings into the house, too.
A life of Branwell Bronte. I might have known it. There's been increasing discontent among the male intellectuals for some time at the thought that a woman wrote Wuthering Heights. Well, I must just avoid him, that's all.
Flora felt much better on her return to the farm, and at 4 o'clock she went into the kitchen to look for some tea. She closed the door, filled the kettle, put some wood on the fire and set the kettle on it, flicked the reminders of dinner off the table with Adam's drying up towel, which she held with the tongs, found a loaf and some butter, but no jam, of course.
I shall have to ask Cousin Judith if I may buy some jam. Good, the kettle.
What the...
Hello. I feel sure you must be Reuben. I'm Flora Post, your cousin, you know. How do you do? I'm so glad to see somebody's come in for some tea. Do sit down. Do you take milk?
The man's big body, etched menacingly against the bleak light that stabbed in from the low windows, did not move. His thoughts swirled like a beck in spate behind the sodden grey furrows of his face.
A woman. Blast. Blast.
Come to wrest away from him the land whose love fermented in his veins like slow yeast. The land. The iron furrows of frosted earth under the rain lust, the fecund spears of rain, the swelling slow burst of seed sheaths, the slow smell of cows and cry of cows, the trampling bride pride of the bull in his hour.
All mine! Mine!
Will you have some bread and butter? Here's your tea. Oh, never mind your boots. Adam can sweep the mud up afterwards. Do come in. Like having tea with a rhinoceros. Is your tea too hot? Have some more milk. Oh, I do wish there were some cucumber sandwiches. I do believe he's about to speak.
Aye, a scranlet of 200 furrows come 5 o'clock down of the butte.
Oh. Now, what does one reply to that remark? Is it a complaint? If so, one might say, my dear, how too sickening for you. But then it might be a boast, in which case the correct reply would be, atta boy, or come, that's capital. No, I'd best play safe. Did you?
Huh?
Horace, he thinks I don't believe him.
Aye, I did too. 200. 200 from Ticklepenny's corner down to Nettle Flitch. My, we out hand to aid me. Could you have done that?
No, indeed. But then, you see, I shouldn't want to.
Wouldn't you, then? Aye, but you'd pay a hired man good money to do it for you, I'll lay. Wasting the farm's takings.
Oh, I see. He thinks I have designs on the farm.
Indeed, I wouldn't. I wouldn't care if Ticklepenny's corner wasn't scranlitted at all. I don't want to have anything to do with Nettleflitch. I'd let you do it all instead.
Let? Let? Her murksy capsy word to use to a man as has nursed a farm like a sick moment, and a man as knows every inch of soil and patch of soup bind in the place. Let?
I really think we had better get this straight. It will make things so much easier. I don't want the farm. Really, I don't. I know nothing about farming, and I don't want to. I'd much rather leave it to people who do know everything about it, like you. I just think what a mess I should make of the soup-bind harvest and everything. You must see that I'm the last person in the world who would be any use at scranlitting. I'm sure you'll believe me.
Oh, well, it's obvious that he wants to believe me, and that's half the battle. He was on the verge of believing me when I made that lucky remark about not wanting to scramble it.
The fire was now burning brightly, and Flora took up some sewing with which to beguile the time until supper. She was making a petticoat. Adam came in from the yard, carrying between finger and thumb a bunch of thorn twigs, holding them ostentatiously in front of him like a torch.
Aye, them and last me till mickle, Mr. Clatter, the dishes were... There's nothing like a thorn twig for clattering dishes. Aye, the rope's as good as altar to a willing horse. Curses like rookses flies home to rest in bosomses and barnses.
He hasn't forgotten my advice about using a little mop to clean the dishes. I must remember to buy one for him.
How do you do? Are you Seth? I'm your cousin, Flora Post. I'm afraid you're too late for any tea, unless you'd like to make some fresh for yourself.
Well, he's not the kind that can be fobbed off with tea. He's like a panther. I'm for it.
Hey, what's that you're making?
He hopes it's a pair of knickers, I'll bet.
An afternoon tea cloth.
Aye. Women's nonsense. You women are all alike, fussing over their fal-lals and bedazing a man's eyes when all they really want is man's blood and his heart out of his body and his soul and his pride.
Really?
Aye, that's all women want, a man's life. Them and they've got him bound up in their fal-lals and bedazing ways and their softness, and he can't move because of the longing for him as cries in his man's blood. You know what they do then?
I'm afraid not. Would you mind passing me that reel of cotton on the mantelpiece, just by your ear?
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
They eats him. Same as hen spider eats a cock spider. That's what women do, if a man lets them.
Indeed.
Aye, but I said if a man lets them. No, I don't let no woman eat me. I eats them instead. That shocks you, eh?
Yes, I think it's dreadful.
Dreadful, aye. Ah, you're all alike. I lay you don't understand half of what I've been saying to you. You little innocent.
I'm afraid I wasn't listening to all of it, but I'm sure that it was very interesting. You must tell me all about your work sometime. What do you do now on the evenings when you aren't, eating people?
I goes over to Beershorn.
To play darts?
No, me play that kid's game with a lot of old men. That's a good one, that is. No, I goes to the talkies.
The talkies, do you? Do you like the cinema?
Oh, better nor anything in the whole world. Better nor me mother, nor this farm, nor Violet down at the vicarage, nor anything.
Indeed. That's interesting. Very interesting indeed.
Thank you.
was undressing that night, she reflected that her campaign for the tidying up of Cold Comfort was progressing quite well when one thought that she had only been there 2 days, and her newly washed curtains hung full and crimson in the candlelight.
So, Seth's grande passion is not women, but the talkies. I must write to Mr. Neck in America, but I can think that out in detail later. There's still Cousin Amos, and no one has so much as breathed a word about introducing me to Aunt Ada Doom.
Each morning at 9 o'clock, Flora watched Mrs. Beetle stagger upstairs with a tray laden with sausages, marmalade, porridge, a kipper, a fat black pot of strong tea, and
at least half the loaf.
Oh, we're a bit off our feed this morning, as you might say. We've only had 2 goes of porridge, 2 soft-boiled eggs, a kipper just on the turn, and half that pot of jam Adam stole from the Vicarage Bazaar last summer. Still, there's room for it where it goes, heaven knows, and we keep healthy enough on it.
I haven't met my aunt yet.
You haven't missed much. Though I must say, at least there's one of them at Cold Comfort as knows her own mind. Even if she did see something nasty in the woodshed when she was 2.
What on earth does that mean, I wonder? Possibly the local idiom for going cuckoo. Anyway, I can't demand to see my aunt if my aunt doesn't want to see me. Well, there's still Cousin Amos.
Flora had learnt from Adam that Amos preached twice a week to the Church of the Quivering Brethren, a religious sect which had its headquarters in Beershorn.
Cousin Amos, are you going to preach to the brethren tonight?
Aye. They'll all burn in hell, and I mun surely tell them so.
Well, may I come too, to hear you preach?
Aye, you can come, you poor, miserable, creeping sinner.
So Flora went to put on her hat and coat. In the yard, Viper, the great gelding, 19 hands high, was harnessed to the trap, and Adam was being swung up and down in the air as he hung onto the reins. As the great beast wickedly jerked his head, Adam's frail body flew up into the darkness beyond the circle of light painted by the lanthorn and was lost to sight. Then down he came again, a twisted grey moth falling into the light as Viper thrust his head down to snuff the reeking straw about his feet.
Do let go of the reins, Adam. He'll hurt you in a minute.
Nay, it is exercise in our Viper.
There, you see?
Aye, let him be for a moitering old fool. Get up, then.
Oh, is there a rug?
Nay, the sins burning in your marrow will keep you warm. Get up, Viper.
It must be so interesting to preach to the brethren, Cousin Amos. I quite envy you. Do you prepare your sermon beforehand, or do you just make it up as you go along?
Don't he speak of the word of the Lord in that godless way, as though to one of the pagan tales in the Family Herald? The word is not prepared beforehand. It falls on me mind like the manna fell from heaven into the bellies of the starving Israelites.
Really? How interesting. Then you have no idea what you're going to say before you get there.
I allus knows to be summat about burning, or the eternal torment, or sinners come to judgment.
Does anyone else preach, or are you the only one?
Only me. No one else gets the word like I do.
I suppose you like preaching very much.
Nay. 'Tis a fearful torment and a groaning to me soul's marrow, but 'tis my mission. Aye, the word burns in me mouth, and I mun blow it out onto the whole world like flame.
You ought to preach to a larger congregation than the brethren. Why don't you go round the country with a Ford van, preaching on market days?
I'm on till the field nearest me hand before I go into the edges and byways. Besides, 'twould be exalting myself if I was to go preaching all over the country in one of they Ford vans. 'Twould be thinking of my own glory instead of the glory of the Lord.
But, Cousin Amos, what does it matter if you do puff yourself up a bit and lose your holy humility if a lot of sinners are converted by your preaching? You see what I mean, don't you? By seeming to be humble and dismissing the idea of making this tour with a Ford van, you are, in reality, setting more value on your soul than on the spreading of the word of the Lord.
Aye, there's truth in what you say. Maybe it is my duty to seek a wider field. I mun think of it.
Aye, it is terrible. To be a new sin to wrestle with. The sin of caring whether me soul is puffed up or not. And how can I tell when I am feeling puffed up when I preach? Whether I'm sinning in me pride, or whether I'm doing right by saving souls, and therefore it won't matter if I am puffed up. Aye, and what right have I to puff myself up if I do save them? Aye, it is a dark and bewildering way.
Yes, Cousin Amos, it is all very difficult, but I do think you have a call, you know. No one should neglect a call. Wouldn't you like to preach to thousands?
Aye, dearly. But 'tis vain glorious to think on.
There you go again.
At this moment, the trap came to a halt in a small yard opening off the high street of Beershorn. Amos left Flora to get down from it as best she could, and she followed him down the high street to a building which she took at first to be an unusually large dog kennel. The doors were open, and she could see that some of the brethren were already seated, while others were hurrying in to take their places.
We must wait till the chapel is full.
Why?
'Tis threatening for them to see their preacher among them like any simple soul. They fear to have me among them breathing warnings of hell, fire, and torment.
But I thought you wanted to frighten them.
Oh, so I do. But in a grand, glorifying kind of a way. I don't want to frighten them so much they won't never come back to hear me preach again.
Oh, I think you underestimate the strength of their nerves, Cousin Amos. I've seldom seen so healthy and solid-looking an audience.
'Tis nearly full.
Does Judith or either of the boys ever come down to hear you preach?
Nay. They strut like Ahab in their pride, and their eyes drip fatness. And the hand of the Lord, it lies heavy on cold comfort, pressing the bitter wine out of our souls.
Then why don't you sell it and buy another farm on a really nice piece of land, if you feel like that about it?
Nay. There have always been Starkadders at cold comfort. 'Tis old Mrs. Starkadder, Ada Doom as was before she married Fig Starkadder. She sought against her reason to farm. And Reuben sits a-waiting for me to go so he can have un. But un shall never have un. Nay, I leave un to Adam first.
Oh, but you couldn't.
That's his fault, his fault. We mun go in.
The dog kennel was now packed to bursting, and Flora thought it would be as well to sit near the door in case the double effect of Amos's preaching and no ventilation became more than she could bear.
Here's the hymn book. 'Tis number 200. Whatever shall we do, O Lord?
Thank you so much.
Whatever shall we do, O Lord, when Gabriel blows on sea and rill? And desert, mount and fort, he hath labored, but we will quit.
Approved of this hymn, because its words indicated a firmness of purpose, a clear plan in the face of a disagreeable possibility which struck an answering note in her own character. The singing was conducted from the platform by a surely excessively dirty old man with long grey hair.
Who is that?
'Tis Brother Ambleforth. He leads the quiver in when we begins to quiver.
And why does he conduct the music with a poker?
To put us in mind of El Fire.
Really?
Yea, miserable crawling worms. I hear again then. Have you come? Like Nimshi, son of Rehoboam, secretly out of your doomed houses to hear what's coming to you. Have you come, old and young, sick and well, matrons and virgins? If there is any virgins among you, which is not likely the world being in the wicked state it is. Old men and young lads, to hear me telling you the great crimson licking flames of hellfire. Aye, you've come. Dozens of you. Hundreds of you. Like rats to a granary, like field mice when there's harvest home. And what good will it do you? Nout. Not the flicker of a whisper of a bit of good. You all die! Die! Oh, do you ever stop to think what that word means? Well, I'll tell you. It means endless horrifying torment, with your poor sinful bodies stretched out on hot gridirons in the nethermost fiery pit of hell, and demons mocking you while the waves cool in jellies in front of you and bind you down tighter on your dreadful bed. Aye, and the air will be full of the stench of burnt flesh and the screams of your nearest and dearest.
I wouldn't mind a glass of water myself.
You know, don't you, what it feels like when you burn your hand and taking a cake out the oven. Or with a match when you're lighting one of those godless cigarettes. It stings with a fearful pain, don't it?
Oh, it does.
And you run away to clap a bit of butter on it and take the pain away. But there'll be no butter in hell. Your whole body will be burning and stinging with an unbearable pain. And your blackened tongue will be sticking out of your mouth. And your cracked lips will try to scream out for a drop of water.
Would you excuse me, please?
Your throat is dry on a sandy desert. And your eyes will be...
Flora felt that she could pass the evening more profitably elsewhere. Besides, she was now very thirsty.
Fresh air. Delicious. Perhaps there's a cafe open somewhere. Yes, there's something. Pam's Parlour. Looks pretty grim. Only one customer, I see. There might, however, be a cup of coffee. Horrors! That must be Mr. Mybug. And I know him. At least I've met him at a party in London. Oh, surely I've endured enough for one evening without having to listen to intelligent conversation. I shall ignore him and hope that he's too engrossed in his book to notice me.
We're closed.
Oh, dear, are you really? Well, do you mind if I sit here for a while?
Suppose not.
I suppose there isn't a cup of coffee, is there? And perhaps some plain biscuits? Oh, and an orange, if you have it.
I'll have to see.
Hello, Flora Post. Do you believe that women have souls?
I'm afraid I'm not very interested.
Aren't you, good girl? We shall be all right if only you'll be frank with me. As a matter of fact, I'm not very interested in whether they have souls either. Bodies matter more than souls. You do remember me, don't you? We met at the Pole Sweats in October.
Your coffee, miss. Biscuits and an orange. I brought you a spoon.
Thank you very much.
I say, that orange does look good. I think I'll have one too. I adore eating things with a spoon. May I sit here?
Do.
We're closed.
I say, that sounds vaguely indelicate. Well, look here, miss. Never mind that. Just bring me an orange and some sugar, will you?
I'll have to see.
Well.
Oh, dear. That's what intellectuals say when they decided to fall in love with one.
You're writing a book, aren't you? Isn't it A Life of Branwell Bronte?
Yes. It's a psychological study, of course, and I've got a lot of new matter, including three letters he wrote to an old aunt in Ireland, Mrs. Prunty, during the period when he was working on Wuthering Heights. Oh. Well, you see, it's obvious that it's his book and not Emily's. It's male stuff. There isn't an intelligent person in Europe today who really believes Emily wrote The Heights. I've worked out a theory about Branwell's drunkenness, too. You see, he wasn't really a drunkard. He was a tremendous genius, a sort of second Chatterton, and his sisters hated him because of his genius.
I thought most of the contemporary records agreed that his sisters were quite devoted to him.
Oh, I know, I know. But that was only their cunning. You see, they were afraid that he would go away to London, taking his manuscripts with him, and they didn't want him to do that because it would have spoiled their little game.
Which little game was that?
Passing his manuscripts off as their own, of course. They wanted to have him under their noses so they could steal his work and sell it to buy more drink.
Who for? Branwell?
No, for themselves. They were all drunkards. But Anne was the worst of the lot. Branwell used to pretend to get drunk at the Black Bull in order to get gin for Anne. I proved all this by evidence from the three letters to old Mrs. Punter.
Your orange.
Oh, I see. Thank you.
But do the letters actually say that he is writing Wuthering Heights?
Of course not. Here is a man working 15 hours a day on a stupendous masterpiece which absorbs almost all his energy. With what little he has left, he writes to an old aunt in Ireland. Now, I ask you, would you expect him to mention that he was working on Wuthering Heights?
Yes.
No. Of course he wouldn't. He'd want to get away from it all for a little while. Of course he wouldn't mention it. Not even to his aunt.
Why not even to her? Was he so fond of her?
She was the passion of his life. She wasn't like the rest of the drab, angular women by whom he was surrounded. She symbolized mystery, woman, the eternal, unsolvable and unfindable ex. Oh, his letters to her are little masterpieces of repressed passion. How is her rheumatism? What is the weather like at Derry Down Derry? At Harris, it is not so good. How is Cousin Martha? And what a picture we get of Cousin Martha in those simple words, a raw Irish chit with limp black hair and clear blood in her lips.
Judging by Flora's personal experience, it was not the habit of men of genius to refresh themselves from their labours by writing to old aunts.
It strikes me as far more likely that Charlotte, Anne or Emily would have had to cope with any old aunts who were clamouring to be written to.
However, perhaps Charlotte, Anne and Emily all decided one morning that it really was Branwell's turn to write to Aunt Prunty and sat on his head in turn while he wrote the three letters, which were afterwards posted at prudently spaced intervals.
Yes. Oh, dear, Mr. Mybug's looking boyish. I wish the Quiverers would hurry up.
Do you care about walking?
Flora was now in a dreadful fix and earnestly wished that the dog kennel would open and Amos, like a fiery angel, come to rescue her.
If I say I adore walking, Mr. Mybug will drag me for miles in the rain while he talks about sex. And if I say I only like it in moderation, he will make me sit on wet stiles while he tries to kiss me. If I say I loathe walking, he will either suspect that I suspect he wants to kiss me, or else he will make me sit in some dire tea room while he talks more about sex and asks me what I feel about it.
There really seems no way out of it except by getting up and rushing out of the cafe.
I thought we might do some walks together. If you'd care to. I warn you, I'm pretty susceptible. Yeah.
Then perhaps we'd better postpone our walks until the weather is finer. It would be too bad if your book were held up by your catching a cold. And if you really have a weak chest, you cannot be too careful.
Yes, of course, yes. Are you with anybody?
My cousin is preaching at the Church of the Quivering Brethren across the road there. He is driving me home.
Ah, I thought we might have walked it.
It is 7 miles, and I'm afraid my shoes are not stout enough.
Check to the king.
I must go, I'm afraid. There's my cousin looking for me. Oh. Goodbye, and thank you so much for telling me about your book. It's been so interesting. Perhaps we shall meet again sometime.
It would be great fun if we could. I'll give you my card. I warn you, I'm a queer, moody brute. But there's something there if you care to dig for it.
Flora did not care to dig, but she thanked him for his card with a smile and hurried out to join Amos.
Fornicator!
No, dash it, Cousin Amos. That wasn't a stranger. It was a person I'd met before at a party in London.
Tis all one. I am worse too, coming from London, the devil's city. You missed a good deal not staying for the Quivering.
I'm sure I did, but your eloquence was altogether too much for my weak and sinful spirit.
The brethren was mightily stirred by my preaching tonight.
I could tell they were. You really ought to see about going round on that Ford van, Cousin Amos.
Oh, no doubt you're a devil sent to tempt me.
And they drove home in silence. It was not until Flora glanced at Mr. Mybug's card in the candlelight of her own room that she discovered that his name was not Mybug, but Meyer Berg, and that he lived in Bloomsbury. It was now the third week in March.
Fecund dreams stirred the yearlings. The sukbind was in bud.
The swede harvest was over, the beet harvest not yet begun. This meant that Micah, Irk, Amos, Carraway, Harkaway, Ezra, Luke, Mark, and the four farmhands who were not related to the family had a good deal of time on their hands in one way and another. Seth, of course, was always busiest in the spring. Adam Lambsbreth was employed about the Beestenhausen with the yearling lambs. Reuben was preparing the fields for the harvest after next. He never rested, however slack the season of the year. But the other stark adders were simply ripe for rows and mischief. As for Flora, she was mixed up in a good many plots. Of course, some of the plots were going better than others.
Oh, Adam, here's your little mop. I got it in Howling yesterday. Look, isn't it a nice little one? It's got a little loop of red string so that you can hang it up when you're not washing the dishes with it. You try it and see.
Tis mine?
Yes. It's yours, your very own. Do take it.
Aye, 'tis mine. Nor house nor kine, and yet 'tis mine. My little mop. My little mop.
Yes, it's to clutter the dishes with.
Nay, 'tis too pretty to clutter those great old dishes with. I mun do that with the thorn twigs. They'll serve. I'll keep my little mop by the cowshed, along with our pointness and our feckless.
But they might eat it.
Aye, so they might, Robert Postchild. Oh, well, I mun hang it up by its little red string above the dishwashing bowl. Never put my little pretty in that good old greasy washing up water.
Oh!
Aye, 'tis prettier nor apple blue, my little mop.
Flora went crossly out for a walk on the downs, hoping to see Elphine. She wanted to get hold of her and give her some tactful advice. Adam had confided his fears about Elphine.
She's aye appearing at the windows of Outchicker Hall to get a sight of that young chuck stubborn Miss Richard.
Outchicker Hall must be Haute Couture Hall, where the Hawk Monitors live. So Miss Richard must be...
Is that the young squire?
Aye, blast him for a gapsy set-up yearling of a womanizer.
And when are they to be married?
When apples grow on the sukbind, you may see lust, vice, and a wedding garment.
Oh, Adam, I think that's taking too black a view of the case. Aye. All the same.
Flora knew her hunting gentry. It was most unlikely that Richard Hawk Monitor was planning a Lyceum betrayal of Elphine, but it was even less likely that he wanted to marry her. Like most other ideas, the idea would simply not have entered his head. Besides, the eccentricity of Elphine's dress, behaviour and hairdressing would put him off automatically.
So unless I do something about it, she will simply be left on my hands. Elphine must be civilised, and then she must marry Richard Hawk Monitor. But first she must be found.
And that's another thing. I don't believe they ever let that bull out into the fields.
Good morning, Reuben. Seth? I think it would be a good idea if you let him out, you know.
Letting out, eh? Big business.
I don't mean for stud purposes. I meant simply for air and exercise. You cannot expect a bull to produce healthy stock if he's shut up in the smelly dark all day.
Oh, it is true. We mun let him out in the great field tomorrow.
Good.
Ah, women, all the same they be.
Good morning, then.
So you went with the old devil to Beersorn, eh? And did the old devil say anything about me?
Really, I don't remember much of what was said because Cousin Amos's sermon was so powerful that it drove everything else out of my head.
Yeah.
I was advising Cousin Amos to address his sermons to a wider audience. I think he ought to go round the country on a lorry, preaching at fairs and on market days.
Written in the harmless birds off the bushes, more like.
Ah, but you see, if Cousin Amos were away a good deal, it would mean that somebody else would have to take charge of the farm, wouldn't it?
Someone else will have to take charge of it in any case when the old devil dies.
Yes, of course. He talks of leaving it to
Adam. Now, I don't think that would be at all wise, do you? I think it would be much better if Cousin Amos were persuaded to go on a preaching tour around England. Then whoever was left in charge of the farm could get a good grip of affairs here. And Cousin Amos couldn't think of leaving the farm to Adam then, because the person who had been managing it would obviously be the person to leave it to.
Meaning you?
No, indeed. I've already told you, Reuben, that I should be no use at all at running the farm. I do think you might believe me.
If he don't mean you, who do he mean?
You.
Me?
I. You.
That's impossible. The old lady would never let him go.
Why not? Why does Aunt Ada Doom like to keep you all here as though you were children?
She's ill. If any on us says we'll leave the farm, she gets an attack. There have always been stark adders at Cold Comfort. None of us may go, except Arkway, where he takes the money down to the bank at Beershorn every Saturday morning.
But you all go into Beershorn sometimes.
Aye, but there's a great risk. If she knew, it would bring on an attack.
An attack? What of? Oh, Reuben, do hurry up and tell me. There's a good soul. All the sun will be gone by the time I get up on the downs.
She's mad.
Oh, so that's it.
You would expect, by all the laws of probability, to find a mad grandmother at Cold Comfort Farm. And for once, the laws of probability hadn't done you down. And a mad grandmother there was.
How very awkward.
Oh, it is terrible. And her madness takes the form of wanting to know everything as goes on. She has to see all the books twice a week. If we keep the books back, she has an attack. Oh, it is terrible. She's the head of the family, you see. We mun keep her alive at all costs. She never comes downstairs but twice a year, on the 1st of May and on the last day of the harvest festival. If anybody eats too much, she has an attack. 'Tis terrible.
It is indeed. It's a most convenient form of madness, too. Well, anyway, because Aunt Ada is mad, there is no reason why you shouldn't try to persuade Cousin Amos to go on a preaching tour and then manage the farm while he's away. You have a stab at it.
Do you think that if I was to look after the farm while the old devil was away, he'd come back and see as I could do it and maybe leave it to me for me own when he's gone?
Yes, I do.
Dang me if I don't din into the old devil how he must be off speechifying this very week. Cousin Flora.
And much to Flora's surprise, he held out his hand to her. She shook it warmly. This was the first sign of humanity she had encountered among the Stark Adders, and she was moved by it. Aunt Ada Doom sat in her room upstairs, alone.
Alone.
Her thoughts wound slowly round the room, like beasts rubbing against the drowsy walls. And outside the walls, the winds rubbed like drowsy beasts. Halfway between the inside and the outside walls, winds and thoughts were both drowsy. How enervating was the warm wind of the coming spring.
When I was very small.
So small that the lightest puff of breeze blew your little crinoline skirt over your head.
I saw something nasty in the woodshed. I never forgot it. That was what made me different. That...
What you had seen in the tool shed...
...made my marriage a prolonged nightmare to me.
Somehow you never bothered about what it had been like for your husband. Even now, when you are 79, you can never see a bicycle go past your bedroom window without a sick plunge at the apex of your stomach.
In the bicycle shed, I saw it. Something nasty. When I was very small...
That is why you stay in this room.
She ran away from the huge, terrifying world outside these four walls, against which her thoughts rubbed themselves like drowsy yaks.
Yes, that's what they're like, yaks. Exactly like yaks.
Outside in the world, there are potting sheds where nasty things can happen.
But nothing can happen here. I see to that. None of my grandchildren may leave the farm. None of them must go out into the great, dirty world, where there are cowsheds in which nasty things can happen and be seen by little girls.
You have them all.
I hold them in the hollow of my hand, as the Lord held Israel. None of them has any money except what I give them. I allow Micah, Irk, Caraway, Mark, Luke, and Ezra 10 pence a week. Each in pocket money. Harkaway has a shilling to cover his fare by bus down into Beershorn and back. I have my heel on them all. They are my washpot, and I have cast my shoe out over them.
Even Seth?
Ah, oh, me darling, me last and loveliest grandchild. He has 1 and 6 pence a week pocket money. Amos has none. Judith has none.
So you sit here, living from meal to meal.
Monday, pork. Tuesday, beef. Wednesday, toad in the hole. Thursday, mutton. Friday, veal. Saturday, curry. Sunday, cutlets.
Day slips into day, season into season, year into year.
And you sit here alone, you...
Cold Comfort Farm. There have always been starcatters at Cold Comfort. Let it rot. You can't have a farm without sheds.
Cow, wood, tool, bicycle, and potting.
And where there are sheds, things are bound to rot. Besides, so far as I can see from my biweekly inspection of the farm account books, things aren't doing too badly. Anyway, here I am, and here they all stay with me.
You tell them you are mad.
Mad.
You have been mad since you saw something nasty in the woodshed.
Years and years and years ago.
The woodshed incident twisted something in your child brain 70 years ago.
It is unfortunate in some ways, but useful in others.
And seeing that it is because of that incident that you sit here ruling the roost and having 5 meals a day brought up to you as regularly as clockwork... It wasn't such a bad break for you that day when you...
Saw something nasty in the woodshed.
In Amos's Call, the second episode of Cold Comfort Farm, Flora Post was played by Patricia Gallimore, Stella Gibbons by Elizabeth Proud, and Mr. John Westbrook by John Westbrook. The Starcatter family. Great Aunt Ada Doom was played by Fabia Drake, Amos, John Hollis, Reuben, Trevor Martin, Seth, Sean Probert, Miriam, Amanda Murray, and Adam Lambsbreath by Cyril Shapps. Mrs. Beetle was played by Miriam Margulies, Mrs. Murtha, Diana Bishop, Waitress, Catherine Hurlbut, and Mr. Mybug, Michael Spice. Quiverers and farm animals were played by members of the cast. Miss Gibbons's book was adapted for radio by Elizabeth Proud, and directed with a further attempt at tidiness by Ian Cotterill. Hymns and other music were provided by Terence Albright, piano and harmonium, and Alison Hurry, violin. When will Flora meet Aunt Ada Doom? Will she ever find out about her rights? Remember Flora's rights? Will she manage to fend off the advances of Mr. Mybug? Can Amos actually drive a Ford van? Stella Gibbons will do her best to answer all these questions in next week's action-packed episode of
Cold Comfort.